Good evening, and welcome to Congressman Steny Hoyer's telephone town hall with a focus on the economy. This is Stephanie from Congressman Hoyer's, and I will be your moderator this evening. Currently, everyone who is in the telephone town hall is connected in listen-only mode. In other words, you can hear me, but I cannot hear you. Before we begin, I have a couple of items to address. Very shortly, Congressman Hoyer will be joining us to discuss the newly enacted American Recovery and Reinvestment Act and its impact on Maryland's citizens. Afterwards, we will open up the discussion for questions. In order to ask a question, please press star 3. Shortly after pressing star 3, you will be transferred to one of our staff, who will then obtain your name, where you are calling from, and what your question is regarding. Later, when I call your name, please re-ask your question, this time to the congressman and before the entire town hall audience. Although we anticipate a high volume of questions this evening and will attempt to get to as many as possible, those who are not able to ask a question will have an opportunity to leave a message for the congressman at the end of this call. Finally, we thank you for your participation. Again, to ask a question, please press star 3. We are now ready to begin. I introduce to you Congressman Steny Hoyer.
Hi, this is Steny Hoyer. I thank all of you for joining us tonight and hope you found this useful. The telephone hall, town hall, provides an efficient, I think, and convenient means for us to have a conversation about the issues that matter to our country and to all of you. There are, of course, as we all know, many challenges facing the nation and people in Maryland and in our district. Tonight we'll focus our conversation on the economy and the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, as Stephanie said. The President signed that bill just recently. I hope this hour-long meeting you find worth your while, and if you choose, take the opportunity to ask a question. As Stephanie also said, when you want to ask a question, simply press 3. Since the start of the recession that we're now in December of 2007, more than 3.5 million American jobs have been lost, half of those coming in the last 3 months alone. Last month, we lost 600,000 jobs, the equivalent of losing one out of every four jobs in our state. Behind, of course, each of these statistics lies a story of personal crisis for an American family or business. We have some friends, neighbors, and family members lose their jobs, see their pensions depleted, or be forced to foreclose on their homes. Our economy is obviously suffering. People are in need. We're shedding jobs at an alarming rate. The need to act was very clear, and almost every advisor said we needed to act quickly and very substantially. We did. This week, President Obama signed into law a plan to restore our economy and put people back to work in our state and across the country. That plan, as you know, called the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, is designed to spur job creation and build a robust and sustainable 21st century economy through a combination of tax cuts and smart stimulative investments. The plan is estimated to create or save up to 3.5 million jobs, including 66,000 here in Maryland, with projects to rebuild our roads, bridges, schools, and flood control systems, invest in science and energy innovation, make healthcare more efficient, and transform our economy, not just for short-term job creation, but for long-term growth. The bill will also provide much-needed assistance to our states, each of which is, like ours, bound by a balance. They are experiencing, as the federal government is experiencing, as individuals are experiencing, substantial challenges. We tried to help. Overall, Maryland will receive $3.8 billion to invest in job-creating infrastructure projects, prevent cuts to education and key public services, and provide nutrition, unemployment, and health care assistance to families in real need. The recovery legislation will also give about 95% of working Americans an immediate tax cut and provides incentives for small business to create jobs and spur investment. In Maryland, some 2.1 million families will be affected by these tax cuts. It will also include unprecedented accountability measures with an historic degree of public transparency that can be tracked online. If you want to follow this over the coming weeks and months, you can follow the way this money is spent on www.recovery.gov. While addressing the economic crisis has been an immediate priority, we're also focused in the long term on returning our nation's budget to balance. I feel very strongly about that. The fact is that President Obama has inherited record deficits and debt. During the last 8 years, we started with a $5.6 trillion surplus, and we now have somewhere in the neighborhood of $11.5 trillion deficit. A terrible turnaround for our country and for our children and grandchildren. With our nation already in a deep fiscal hole, it'll take some time to turn our budget around. I intend to work very hard with the President to return us to fiscal responsibility. Already I've spoken several times to President Obama about the need for long-term fiscal reform. I'm confident the President will work with Congress to make the hard but responsible choices necessary to put us back on a fiscally sound path. Indeed, there's going to be a fiscal summit on this coming Monday at the White House. It should also strengthen our confidence to know that President Obama is moving forward, as we've urged him to do, with a comprehensive strategy to restore our financial markets and curb the rate of foreclosures at the heart of our economic crisis. We've been hard hit in this district, and the country has been hard hit. This new approach, combined with an infusion of jobs and investment from the recovery plan, our advisors and experts of both parties and all persuasions tell us is the best hope to get our economy back on track and reverse the economic freefall that is being felt here in Maryland and across America. Indeed, we in Maryland are pretty fortunate. We have a large, stable employer in the federal government and a number of other very stable employers in our state. But even in our state, we've seen unemployment spike to 5.8%. In the weeks and months ahead, I hope you'll share with me your ideas about the work Congress is doing and what else can be done to strengthen our communities and further improve the quality of life for Maryland citizens. I met today with the Chamber of Commerce from Calvert County, going over their thoughts on what we should be doing and additional things that they think we ought to do. We can begin tonight as we move into the part of the town hall where you set the agenda. Again, please be reminded that to ask a question, you must press 3. Thanks for joining us. Excuse me, star 3. I said just 3. Star 3 is what you need to press. Okay, your turn.
We're going to go ahead and take some questions now. Please remember, as Congressman Hoyer said, that to ask a question, you'll need to press star 3. At that time, you'll be transferred to one of our staff who will place you into the question queue. Tonight, we'll take our first question from Patrick O'Brien from Leonardtown. Patrick, why don't you go ahead and ask your question?
How can we measure the impact of the economic recovery legislation, and then, and when will Marylanders start to see the impact?
Well, thank you very much for that question, Patrick. And it's a good question, because obviously we want to be able to measure effectiveness, and the real measure of effectiveness here and around the country is going to be whether or not we stop losing jobs, hemorrhaging jobs, if you will, at the rate of over 500,000 a month, and whether we start gaining jobs as businesses start the ability to stay in business and consumers have more money in their pocket to buy the things they need. Obviously, one of the problems that we've seen in our economy is the very, very precipitous fall in consumers spending money. They've done that because they're fearful. They've done that because they've lost jobs. They've done that because they don't know whether or not they can buy things that they need, and they're saving it for absolute essentials like food and heat and gasoline for their car to get to work. So the measure will be if we stop the hemorrhaging of jobs, start stabilizing the economy, and start picking up jobs, and we see the economy getting back to life.
All right, our next question. question tonight comes from Carl Bryan in Park Hall, Maryland. Carl, please ask your question.
Congressman, you had mentioned fiscal responsibility, and Congress has passed this enormous plan with the hopes of targeting key sectors to generate the economics.
Yes, sir.
Wouldn't it have been more prudent to have focused on giving an across-the-board tax cut, and it would have reduced the monies in the Treasury and forced Congress to actually be more fiscally responsible and focus on their programs? I mean, this is just more money in the debt that has to be compensated for, and you're anticipating growth to replenish that money.
Carl, clearly you're right. We are anticipating growth and hoping for growth and investing in growth. But your question is a good question, and your concern is very legitimate. Let me tell you, and I ask those same questions. In talking to economists, Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, across the spectrum, academic, business, economists, much of the advice we got was that tax cuts alone would not spur the economy, that we needed to replace, in effect, some of the spending that consumers were making with government spending, which is, economists tell us, one of the ways to try to get the economy moving. It, obviously, in good times, when the economy is running well, you ought not to do that. But in bad times, as we're now in, economists tell us the best way is through a combination of tax cuts. And as you probably know, over a third of this bill is tax cuts. 95% of Americans will get, American families will get a tax cut under this bill. Businesses will have some tax incentives as well. But also we're going to be investing, for instance, in roads and bridges, which we need repaired, which we need to be up to speed, and that will, we hope, create additional jobs. So what I've said earlier is that once we get through this very rough time, referred to by Ben Bernanke, who's the Federal Reserve Chairman, appointed by President Bush, once we get through this period of time, Mr. Bernanke says is that it is at that point in time that we need to get back to fiscal prudence and spending at a level for what we buy consistent with what we have. So I agree with your proposition entirely, and as a matter of fact, as I said, on Monday we're going to be talking about just that. But in the short term, the economy is in the worst shape that almost anybody has seen, or anybody has seen, since the 1930s. And if we don't get it going again, economists tell us that we will lose more money. In other words, we're investing, in this case, about $800 billion. Economists tell us if you don't invest this, if we don't get the economy moving, it's going to cost us more in the long run.
Okay, thank you for that question. Our next question comes from Caroline Amston from Chesapeake Beach, and she has a question about how the stimulus package will impact specifically Southern Maryland. Caroline?
Yes, thank you, Congressman Hoyer. I appreciate this forum, and I was really glad to get your call. My question is, as a small business person, how soon the stimulus package will affect our lives here in Southern Maryland, and what specifically can we expect in the near future? For example, perhaps different sorts of loans through the SBA and the like.
Well, we have affected the SBA for small businesses. We tried to make some loans more available to small businesses, but tax credits available. Expensing, we've extended the $250,000 expensing for capital projects for small business. But you ask in the short term. In the short term, families can immediately start adjusting their tax deductions to reflect the tax cut that is in this bill. In addition, we are hopeful that almost immediately, and when I say almost immediately, within the next 30 or 60 days, we're going to see work started on roads and infrastructure. If you're in construction or if you're in some small business that is a supplier of people in construction, we hope that the billions of dollars invested in this state, well, hundreds of billions of dollars invested in this state alone on infrastructure, we think will create a lot of jobs. We expect to create about 66,000 jobs in this state. If you're in small business and you're operating, presumably and hopefully, obviously a significant number of those people will be in Southern Maryland, about 9,000-10,000 of them be in Southern Maryland, that we will have more consumers, more people able to buy your products or services, and that they will encourage your business and all small businesses, and that our economy will, as a result, rebound from this deep trough that it's in. We're also going to have, in Southern Maryland in particular, specific spending on resurfacing projects and bridge projects. In Charles County, about $4.5 million, and about $4 million apiece in St. Mary's and Calvert County.
All right. Thank you for that question. The next question is with regard to the rising cost of energy, and it comes from Susan Lord in Waldorf.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, Mr. Hoyer. How are you today? Oops, sorry.
Fine, thanks. Doing well tonight today. I got you.
Okay. Senator, what I'm going to ask about is the cost of electricity. Ever since it's been deregulated, our electrical bill has increased almost twofold. Before the deregulation, when the coldest part of the winter would come, our bill might be $350. Now it's almost $600, and I don't feel like we've had the coldest part of the winter yet. So besides struggling to pay mortgage, people are also having to struggle to pay electrical that has doubled. My next-door neighbor used to pay about $90, maybe $125. She's now paying over $300, and she is the only person that lives at her house.
Susan,
so I wanted to know what Maryland was going to do about that.
Well, when you say Maryland, obviously you're absolutely correct. Regulation and deregulation is a state issue, and the Maryland General Assembly is considering that. But one of the reasons, of course, our energy prices have spiked so greatly, and I've experienced the same kind of increase you just talked about that you had in your home, is that the price of producing that electricity has risen because of the cost of fuel. That's one of the reasons we included a lot of dollars in this package for reinvestment and recovery on basic research into energy alternatives to investment in a smart grid so that we can upgrade our ability to get energy from alternative energy sources that are both cost-effective and environmentally friendly to consumers. If we don't become energy independent, then we're going to be hostage to an awful lot of people around the world who supply us with a lot of energy but don't care much for us and certainly aren't worried about whether you and I and others on this line and in our communities are paying high prices to heat their homes and therefore causing them great distress with meeting their other bills. But you're absolutely right. But one of the ways we want to get there from the federal standpoint is to make ourselves more energy efficient. There's a substantial investment in weatherization that's available for families to make sure their homes are as energy efficient as possible so they don't have to put the heat up as high because the home stays hotter longer or warmer longer, or for that matter in the summer, cooler longer without as much expenditure of energy. So those are some of the things that we're doing, Susan, but you're absolutely correct. Until we get to be energy independent, we're going to have high prices. As far as your initial question on the regulation versus non-regulation or deregulation, that's a state issue, and they're now talking about it. But whether we're regulated or deregulated, if we don't get a handle on the cost of energy and how we produce electricity, we're going to continue to have prices that are going to cause us problems.
All right. Our next question is from Sarah Parker at College Park, and she has a question regarding the impact of the economic recovery on local schools. Sarah?
Yes. Hi. Good evening.
Hi.
My question is how is the stimulus package going to affect our local school systems?
Well, I've talked to the governor about that, and I think the answer to your question is it'll have a very positive effect to the extent that Maryland is going to be advantaged by some significant dollars, both in special education, in the IDEA program for disabled children, but also in Title I for disadvantaged children. But in addition to that, there'll be substantial sums available, almost $700 million, for local school systems so that they will prevent the kind of cuts in teachers and in supplies and personnel that will undermine the education of our kids. Without this assistance from the federal government, Governor O'Malley has indicated he would have to make, and local school systems have indicated, as I say, I met with the Calvert County commissioners today, that they would have to otherwise make substantial cuts. So Sarah, what we're hoping is that this assistance, and the governor seems to believe this is the case, will be of substantial help to the local school systems. And I want to make it clear, the local school systems are guaranteed this aid directly that will be distributed by formula, not by the Congress. We didn't mandate that, but by existing formula. So the governor will be making sure that money goes directly to the local education agencies in each one of our counties. So I think it's going to have a very positive effect. Hopefully it will reduce, I don't know that it will eliminate, but reduce substantially the laying off of teachers and the growth in class size, which undermines the quality of the education that our kids have.
All right, the next question is on a slightly different topic related to the mortgage crisis. It comes from Joseph Stump from La Plata. Joseph?
Yes, hello, Senator. How you doing, sir?
Fine, Joe. Thank you for calling.
My question to you, and I want to just tell you I'm thankful for this call, and I appreciate it, and I think this is a good way to, you know, find out people's views.
Thanks a lot.
And I, you know, I commend you for doing it. But, you know, recently, you know, with this mortgage bailout bill that was just passed, you know, I know this is a little off topic. I mean, it was brought up, so I just want to mention it. You know, I think a lot of us that are doing the right thing out here every day, going to work, paying our bills, living in houses that we can afford, not going overboard, we're taking a hit here, sir. You know, in the respect that we're bailing out people that shouldn't be bailed out. I mean, if you make the wrong decisions in life, how are you going to learn to make the right ones if the federal government's going to run to your assistance and bail you out and pay your bills? And actually, in essence, we as taxpayers are going to take a double hit because we're paying our bills, and we're going to see it in the extra tax money that we have to spend to bail these other people out. You know,
I think.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead, sir.
Thanks. Let me tell you, I think what you've just said, that view is shared by an awful lot of people around our state and around the country, and very frankly, by members of Congress as well. I want you to know that. The problem is, of course, we had individuals who bought homes that they couldn't afford, but we also have a lot of individuals who bought homes with the expectation of keeping their jobs, have lost their jobs through no fault of their own, but their employer just, the business went down, they had to lay people off. And as a result, people were put in a position where they couldn't pay their mortgage payment. Now, some people overbought. They couldn't afford. But some banks, frankly, were irresponsible. Some lenders, very irresponsible as well, in lending people money for housing that they couldn't afford if there was any downturn at all. And what a lot of people did, they bet, frankly, on the continuing appreciation of value in the home, figuring, well, if I buy a home for $400,000, I can afford a $250,000 or $300,000 home. Well, if I have a problem, I can sell it because it's going to appreciate $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year. Well, in point of fact, of course, the housing market went bust essentially. And the problem, Joe, with just saying and shrugging our shoulders and say, well, some people made bad decisions, that's tough. It is tough, but as I said, a lot of folks did it not because they made bad decisions, but just because the economy went bad and they lost their job, number one. Number two, even if they made bad decisions, if their home is foreclosed on and they're your next-door neighbor and it's shut up, the value of your home goes down. And unfortunately, what a lot of people are finding is they are now what is called underwater. That is mean they bought a home, they took out a loan. Now the value of that home is less than the value of their loan. It's gone down $50,000, $100,000. Some people have gone down $200,000, $300,000. If they have a home of $500,000, it may now be worth $250,000. So you're right in a certain sense, and we are very concerned about that. On the other hand, if we don't stabilize the housing market, if we continue to have escalating foreclosures, the value of your home, work hard every day, play by the rules, you pay your mortgage, you pay your payments, your credit's good, you're making ends meet. It's tough, but you're making ends meet. But what will happen is if we have a broad swath of continuing foreclosures, the value of your home will be at risk, and the value of your community will be at risk. Your neighborhood will be at risk. So I think the president was right. I think we're right in trying to stabilize this market. We don't want to reward bad actors or irresponsible people, whether they were borrowers or lenders. An awful lot of lenders, brokers, figured out how they could make money without taking any risk, and they passed it along to others. Unfortunately, it's now causing everybody in the country a real problem. This housing crisis is at the basis and the beginning of our economic crisis. So, again, Joe, I share your concern, but we got to stabilize the housing market if we're going to get this economy back to where we want it and make sure that your home's value doesn't plummet.
Okay, appreciate these questions very much. The next one is from Patricia Hitt, and her question is with regard to the impact of the economic recovery on retirees. Patricia?
Hi there.
Hi, Patricia.
How you doing, hon?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. How are you doing?
Oh, fine.
I've got a cold, as you can probably tell, but other than that, I'm doing fine.
Well, Tommy's sick with a cold, too.
Uh-huh.
No, I was wondering, does the stimulus, does it have anything for retirees for help for us or not?
Yeah, one of the things we did, Patricia, was because retirees are not, you know, they may be not be paying income taxes or railroad retirement beneficiaries or Social Security recipients, what we have done is provide for a $250 payment directly to just those on disability, those on Social Security, and those that have a railroad retirement and disabled veterans receiving benefits from the Department of Veterans Affairs. So we were concerned about that. There is this payment, and, of course, the hope is that it'll give some people ability to either pay their bills or hopefully if they've got a little discretion, a little income left over, buy something they need. And in doing so, we'll help the economy grow.
Thank you so much for that question. Our next questioner is Elizabeth Horton. She's calling from Upper Marble, and she has a question again on the recovery package. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Hi. Good evening, Congressman.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having this forum.
You bet. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Well, I apologize for probably oversimplifying this issue, but my question basically is, you hear about these bailouts for all of these companies, and my question is basically, with the amount of money that we're spending and trying to, I apologize, my baby is crying.
Oh, well, you don't have to apologize to me. You're there.
The amount of money that we're giving to these companies to bail them out, wouldn't it be more cost efficient to basically give that money to those people who would potentially be unemployed by, you know, those companies going under, instead of rewarding these people who have mismanaged these companies and have continued to do so irresponsibly?
Well, Elizabeth, that's my first gut reaction as well. The problem is when you talk to economists, you talk to experts, and you sit down, and the problem is some of these enterprises are so big that if you let them go down and they're not paying their own bills, then the taxpayer not only gives them, as we have done, as you say, gives some subsidy. For instance, let's take the automobile companies as an example where we've given them substantial billions of dollars. About one of every nine jobs in America is related in one way or another to the automobile industry. Now, the automobile industry is facing a real problem. The number of automobiles sold in this country has gone from 17 million a year down to about 10 million a year. And so the automobile industry, and that's affected not just General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler, but Toyota, Nissan, others, Hyundai, have all been affected as well. The automobile industry is critical, we believe, to the health of our economy and the creation of literally millions of jobs and the keeping of millions of jobs. So we invested in those. President Bush made the determination. We didn't pass legislation on that. President Bush made a determination to put money in the automobile companies. They've now come up with a plan, which we required them to do on February 17th, 2 days ago, to try to get through this very, very sharply declining consumer demand for their product and sustain as many jobs as they can. Because if they don't sustain the jobs, what happens is people lose their jobs, they go on unemployment, they lose their health care coverage. They then have to go, if they get sick, on Medicaid, which, again, is a demand on a public resource. So, in effect, what we're trying to do is invest in keeping people in business, keeping them able to employ people, and keeping them in a position when they to get through this very rough patch, and it may take some time, to continue to help us grow the economy. But it sure does, you are absolutely right, it sure does give you a real pain to think about bailing out some of these financial companies in particular with billions of dollars of our money and then seeing them give big salaries and big bonuses. And as you know, one of the things we've done is included language to prevent that happening if they take our money. They're taking our money to get through a rough patch. Now, as you know, much of this are loans. The automobile company is going to have to pay us back. And we just didn't give them the money. And they're going to have to pay us back at some point in time when they start making profits. It may be a longer time than we want. But in most of these instances, with the financial companies, we've purchased, in effect, equity interest. That is part of their business. So that when and if they get through this, as we hope they will, they start making profits, we believe we'll get much of this money back. That's certainly our hope and objective.
Okay, Congressman Hoyer, I'm going to now pose a question to you that we've seen come up a few times among the callers, and that question is, who is mainly responsible for this economic crisis we're in today?
Well, you know, I'd like to be able to say Joe or Jane or one person was responsible, but I said today at the chamber, frankly, there are a whole lot of us that are responsible. When I say a whole lot of us, consumers went too deeply into debt. They bought homes they couldn't afford. They ran up credit card bills they couldn't afford. Businesses ran up debts of theirs, gave credit they should have never given. Government went deeply into debt at the federal level, which we shouldn't have done. And as a result of all this debt that we have created, the economy came to a stop. And credit locked up. That is to say, people said, I can't give credit anymore. Now, at the center of this crisis was the housing crisis, where people bought homes way above what they could afford, and banks loaned money to people who they shouldn't have risked their money with. what the banks then or lending institutions did was then turn around and sell that debt or what they call securitizing it, putting it in a big security and selling it as a bond to a third party. And everybody thought the merry-go-round would never stop. They would never have to pay the piper. And a lot of people made profits but didn't take any risk. They're the real people who I think are responsible for this. But whoever's responsible, we got to work together to get out of this hole because it's whoever's responsible, every one of us is paying the price. But I know an awful lot of us are angry. I know a lot of you on this phone call are angry, and I share that anger, and I want you to know the Congress shares that anger. Let me give you a quote that I used today, which I think is an excellent one and speaks to this situation. Lyndon Johnson once said, it's not difficult to do the right thing. It's difficult to know what the right thing is. And what I mean by that is that in this instance, we're all trying to figure out how can we get out of this hole? How can we get our people back to work? How can we stop foreclosures? How can we make sure that we have a growing economy, not a shrinking economy? Nobody has the absolute answer to that. But what we have done is based upon the best advice and counsel that we can get from some of the best economists and business leaders in this country. Hopefully, it will work. But certainly, an awful lot of people are responsible, as I said, who bought things they couldn't afford, who gave loans that they should never have given, and government that went into debt in good times and didn't pay for what it was buying.
Okay, our next question comes from Gerald Washington, and he's calling from Clinton this evening.
Good evening, Congressman Horace.
Good evening, sir.
I'm trying to maintain my composure. I'm very excited to have an opportunity to speak with you, but I'll be straight to the point.
Well, I'm glad you called. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Congratulations on your new position in the House.
Thank you.
I am very, very, very much interested in education reform. I am a strong believer, and I wrote all this out so this way I can just get straight to it. I am
okay.
A very strong believer that a lot of the problems we are all facing come from lower levels of financial literacy. What if we make Accounting 101 and Economics 101 required before kids graduate high school? Because of my job, I see the differences between families that show their kids how to manage their money versus families that have utility bills in the kids' name because the parents have insufficient credit, thus perpetuating a vicious cycle of poor debt management. I've gone to the Maryland Department of Education in Baltimore with Catherine Oliver, Dr. Piper, and a couple of them, and I've shared this idea. I think Cecil County and Anne Arundel County are actually now doing this in their school system, I think either this year or last year. I really think this is a real long-term fix to the huge problem in our country of financial literacy.
Gerald, I think that's an excellent idea. Now, in many of our school systems and schools, we are in fact doing that. But you're absolutely right. It's not broad enough. An awful lot of people are not financially literate. They don't understand. And sophisticated people who are, you know, smart people. These are, but they're not literate, as you point out, in terms of the financial consequences of some of the things that they do. And the more financially literate that they are, the less likely they are to be taken advantage of, the less likely they are to get into debt, which they can't handle, and the less likely they are to be a burden on the rest of us. So I think it's an excellent suggestion. I'm going to discuss it with Nancy Grasbeck, our superintendent, our state superintendent of schools, and look at this. I know because I've participated in programs throughout our school system and the Prince George's school system and others that do that, but I don't know that any of them have, as you suggest, a required course on financial literacy. But certainly in these times, that's a very good suggestion.
Yes, thank you very much for that great question. Our next question comes from Don Wathan. Don, also the question related to the economic recovery.
Hi, Don.
Hi, Mr. Hoyer. I was kind of wondering how come this economic stimulus was pushed through so fast before it had a chance to be debated, because it seems like there's an awful lot of unnecessary spending that our kids will be paying for. I'm a father of two young children, and there's a lot of stuff that shouldn't have been included. It should have just been stuff to get the economy going again, not stuff to add to the burden, because there's some stuff that has been added on unnecessarily.
Don, let me. Your first question was, why was it done so quickly?
Yes, sir.
Which is a good question, and a lot of people ask that question, and it was done relatively quickly, but not as quickly as some people think. And what I mean by that is, this was not a January effort. In October, November, and December, there were a lot of hearings held by the various committees on what our response ought to be to the mortgage crisis, what our continuing response ought to be to the fiscal crisis that was an economic crisis, the job loss, which started hemorrhaging about October. And when we lost, we started losing half a million jobs a month over the last 3 months. And so a lot of these matters were considered over a much longer period of time than what appeared to be when we came into session in early January, back into session. The Congress was not in session, but hearings were going on, meetings were going on, discussions were going on, and President-elect Obama and the Bush administration had substantial discussions about what action ought to be taken. I don't mean that they necessarily agreed, but there were substantial discussions. The advice and counsel was from economic experts, including a former advisor to John McCain, was that you need to have a broad package. It needs to be mixed. You'd have to have tax cuts. This bill has about 35% tax cuts for individuals. About 95% of families in America will get a tax cut. And business tax incentives and credits. That was included. In addition, what they said was you also need to spend at the federal level. And what that does is replace the lack of spending that's going on in the economy, which is leading to the slowdown and the loss of jobs. We lost, as I said at the beginning of the program, 600,000 jobs in this country last month, and 65,000 jobs in one day. Now that's a crisis. You can't wait. And every economist said you got to move quickly, because if you don't, literally millions of people are going to be in very, very bad shape. The economy is going to continue to tank, and it will be more difficult to rescue if you wait. That's why we acted, what I would say, promptly and significantly. Are there items in there that I perhaps would not have supported spending in this bill? You're absolutely right. I agree with you on that. And I'm sure that everybody sort of had a different view on that. But this was a consensus of what needed to be done, and so we acted. Let us all hope that it works. It may not be the last thing we'll have to do, but let's hope that this does have the effect that is intended, and that is to try to get the hemorrhaging of jobs stopped, save jobs, and start growing our economy back.
Okay, we have about 15 minutes left in the telephone town hall this evening. We're going to shift topics for a couple questions here and shift over to the Chesapeake Bay. We have a question from Peter Woodside. Peter, go ahead. You're from Hollywood. Go ahead. Ask your question.
Good evening, Congressman, and I appreciate your time.
Sure thing.
I'm concerned about the quality of water in the Chesapeake Bay as it relates to the watermen. There seems to be a series of state issues between Maryland and Virginia to rectify the situation. Is there anything from the federal standpoint that's going to happen?
Again, this bill, as I've been saying, essentially is about jobs, about the creation of jobs, and about helping those who lost their jobs and trying to stabilize states, local governments from losing additional jobs, police, fire, and teachers. In addition to that, in terms of creating jobs, what we tried to do is invest in a broad number of priorities that we need to have done anyway, but if we do them now and create jobs to get them done, we'll benefit by both having projects done that we need and creating jobs. One of those is clean water, and this bill has some $4 billion in it for clean water state revolving funds, and we expect the six Bay states and the District of Columbia to receive almost $900 million towards the effort of cleaning up our water and making sure that we continue the effort to have not only a clean environment but healthy drinking water.
Okay, thank you for that question. The next question comes from Joseph O'Neill in Davidsonville, and his question is with regard to trade relations with China.
Good evening, Congressman.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good, good. I'm a 23-year Army veteran and a current employee of the Defense Department.
Excellent.
I'm wondering when Congress, or if Congress, is going to revisit our trade relationship with China. I watch China for a living, and I can tell you, as you probably know, there's not a level playing field when it comes to trade.
I agree with that.
Non-tariff trade barriers. Chinese workers aren't allowed to form unions. They're manipulating the currency. Meanwhile, they're taking this huge trade surplus and spending a lot of it on weapons, which may eventually be used against us. So I'm wondering if Congress is going to revisit this issue.
I think the answer to that is yes, and clearly the Obama administration is looking at that. Now, as you well know, China is having its own economic problems now. They've lost, I think the figure, whether it's 16 or 26 million jobs, I think. Of course, they're a country of over a billion people, but still, they're having their problems themselves. However, having said that, you're absolutely right. There's not a level playing field. One of the things that you recall we did 3 years ago when, in January of 2007, Democrats became the majority party, was to demand of the administration that if we were going to move ahead with trade as they wanted to do, it had to be on a more level playing field, and that we had to have provisions in our trade agreements that dealt with workers' rights and environmental protections. Obviously, environmental protections are not only worthy in terms of cleaning up our environment, making it healthy, but also environmental protections that are required by the U.S. to keep our environment clean cost money. And if our trading partners don't do the same thing, then that gives them an economic advantage. And as you point out, there's not a level playing field. So the answer to your question, short answer is, yes, I think this is going to, not I think, it's going to be reviewed. And clearly the Obama administration is looking at it. As you know, the Secretary of State Clinton, is over on the Far East right now. And I'm absolutely confident that's part of the discussion.
Okay, our next question comes from John Sledge. He's calling from Cedarhurst, and he has a question about what the average American can do to stabilize the economy.
What is the best thing the average American can do to get this thing back on the tracks?
I think the answer to that question is going to sound simplistic, but I think it's accurate. I think the average American, you and I, as two of 300 million people, have got to act responsibly. We've got to handle our own affairs in a responsible way. We've got to not only support our families to the best extent we can, but we've got to make sure that we don't incur additional debt beyond our means, but also not be fearful, not be so fearful of tomorrow that we make it worse. By that I mean, if we need something and we can afford it, we ought to go out and buy it, because somebody has to make it, somebody has to service it, somebody has to sell it, we see that when people stop buying, businesses go out of business. Circuit City is a perfect example where they're now bankrupt. But got to do it responsibly. Just spending for spending's sake, it doesn't make sense for any of us. But not spending when you can afford it and you need it, and just being afraid, makes the situation in our country and the economy worse. So I think every one of us as average Americans needs to act responsibly. Our president said that in his inaugural address. He said that we need to all take responsibility. Unfortunately, as a previous caller indicated, an awful lot of people in business and in banks didn't act responsibly. An awful lot of credit givers didn't act responsibly. And an awful lot of people who got credit, who incurred debt, didn't do so responsibly. And those of us who did act responsibly are sort of in the trick bag with them. And we've got to get out of this. But the way we're going to get out of it, I think, is to exercise responsibility and discipline, but not have fear.
Okay, thank you, Congressman Hoyer. I'm afraid that is the last question that we have time for this evening. If you are not able to ask a question, we do have a number of people who are not able to ask their questions. You will have an opportunity to leave a message for the congressman after this call has concluded. And with that, I will turn it over to Congressman Hoyer for a few concluding remarks.
Thank you very much, Stephanie. I appreciate your role in this. And I want to thank everybody who's been online. We've taken a very few number of questions relative. I'm told that there were some 3,500 people on this call at one point or another. Maybe not everybody all at the same time because you've got things to do, dinners to fix, kids to put to bed. I understand that. I hope you found this a convenient way, however, to participate for such time as you could. I know I saw somebody in the grocery store not too long ago, about 2 months ago after our last telephone town hall meeting, which was earlier. I think it was at 6 o'clock, who said to me, she said, you know, I wish you could have this a little later because I'm just getting home from work. We put it a little later. Maybe next time we'll do it even a little later to give people perhaps more time. But then again, if it gets too much later, you want to get to bed. I don't blame you for that. In any event, the times are tough in America. We have great challenges confronting us. We in Congress are trying to do the best we can and rely on the best advice that we get. But as I said to the last caller, what each of us is going to have to do is put our shoulder to the wheel. In whatever we're doing, in the best way we can do it, and say to ourselves that, yes, the times are tough, but America's seen tough times before and gotten through them. We're going to get through this, but we're going to get through this working together. And one of the ways to do so is for us to share opinions with one another, and I find this a really good way to do that. And I want to thank each and every one of you who participated in this call. And if you've got thoughts that we weren't able to get to, drop me a note and let me know your thoughts. Again, I want to thank you for participating. And if you want to get in touch with my office, I want to give you my email address again. Website address again, www.hoyer.house.gov. Again, thank you for participating. I wish you the very best. Let's hope what we're doing works and our economy gets back on track and America is again the great engine for creating the quality of life that it has been for so long for so many. Good night.